Thanks for listening to Schlereth than Evans On Demand, brought to you by Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. If you're in the market for replacement windows, there's only one place to turn. That's Gravina's Window Center of Littleton. Visit them online at windowsforyourhome.com.
Yesterday, listening to The Drive, as you should every day, listening to our guy, D-Mac, talking about the head coaching situation as it stands now and how it ultimately correlates to Gary Kubiak. Check this out.
So, VJ is as much of a, figurehead coach as I've ever seen in the NFL. He doesn't call plays. He doesn't come up with the offensive game plan. He's not coming up with a defensive game plan. He's not calling the defensive plays. He has coaches out the yin-yang with a lot more experience than he does in managerial roles. And you've got Gary Kubiak, who just won a Super Bowl a couple years ago, as your personal sort of babysitter. This dude is circled. I mean, he is the head coach. I'll give you that. And he certainly gets the pay. But dude's a figurehead. So if they start dropping games, it's going to be Kubiak if things go south. He's going to step back in. Don't be surprised at all. It's not like they want to fire VJ. It's just they're ready to if they need to.
Troy Rank, Zach Bye filling in for the fellas this morning. What do you make of that? I know there was a lot there, and we'll unpack it, but your biggest takeaway that, D-Mac is kind of saying that Gary Kubiak's going to walk in here and coach this team if things go awry.
I mean, I understand how he's connecting those dots. I just don't believe with Gary's health, his family's desire to keep him from coaching, to keep him healthy. I mean, he went through a couple of major episodes where he left an NFL football field in an ambulance twice.
Right.
Wasn't like, and his symptoms of his last health issue were very similar to the mini stroke he suffered in Houston, even though they were diagnosed differently. I mean, those were real life health issues. So it would surprise me. But because he's around more, I get it. I get the speculation. I don't see it. I don't see that he would. But the issue where D-Mac has an interesting point here is, if Vance Joseph were let go and fired if they get off to 2-4 start, who on the staff would take over?
It'd be Bill Musgrave.
Again, that's the one issue, is who would be the obvious guy? And if it's not Musgrave because they like to keep the coordinators in place type thing, that's where you'd say, okay, could I see Kubiak? But I don't see Gary doing that because of his health. And I know people say, I just know that the person that left for reasons that involved his health. And I would be surprised, given how much his family doesn't want to see him back in the meat grinder. Because Gary Kubiak, the problem is, he could have kept coaching if he'd say, I'll just do 12-hour days. He can't. It's impossible for him as a head coach. He's an 18-hour, 20-hour a day, sleep-at-the-office guy, which leads right back to the same health problems for me. So I would, is Vance Joseph on the hot seat? Yes. Is he in some ways, powerless, it feels like at times? It does. But
is that still the case this year?
He's got more of a chance this year because he has a staff that suits his personality more, of guys who didn't feel like they should have been the head coach. I mean, he took over a Super Bowl staff with multiple guys on staff who are looking around like, why am I not the head coach? And that doesn't, I'm not saying they were undermining him. I'm not going to go that far. But it didn't lead to great chemistry and synchronicity in the staff. When you have multiple guys on staff who feel like they should have been the head coach before him.
Troy, there's no doubt about it. And you can go through last year, and we do it pretty critically. Every week you would pick up a detail or two that there was just a lack of general connectivity. It just was.
Well, and it started with Mike McCoy, I thought would be adaptable. He never stopped acting like a head coach. He didn't listen to Vance Joseph. And he ultimately got fired because he would not stop running three wide set, setting them up for interceptions, picks, bad pass protection. But he never stopped acting like a head coach.
Vance Joseph could hear that, Troy.
Right.
You could hear that. We would, and with the noon to three shift, we carry the pressers live. We would look at each other and say, he sounds like the head coach.
Right, which is a problem when you're not listening to the actual head coach,
right,
which he wasn't. Whether he should have or not doesn't matter. If you're on the staff as a coordinator, you've got to respect the wishes of the head coach or you won't be the coordinator very long. And eventually, it wasn't working. And I think McCoy was running an offense that was trying to get him another head coaching job. He was not running an offense that best suited the personnel of last year's Broncos.
Which is interesting because, and I don't mean to interrupt you, Troy, but the fascinating part about that statement is that is the complete opposite of the narrative surrounding Mike McCoy when he got here.
Exactly.
It was like Mike McCoy is a player's coach because he adapts to the player's strength.
Because he did, though. That wasn't speculation. He did it with Tebow. He did it with Manning. He did it with Rivers. And when he got here, it was like he thought he had Philip Rivers at quarterback. He was going to run that offense no matter who the quarterback was, and it backfired. Joe Woods was a first-year coordinator. That's an issue. And he had guys on the defensive staff who felt, you know, like, hey, I got passed over. And then you had Studisville, who was the interim coach at one point during
That's
his
right.
career.
Yep.
He got passed over. Tyke Tolbert had been here forever.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That was the issue, is you had a lot of guys on that staff who could look at the resume and go, why am I not the head coach? And it doesn't mean they disliked Vance, but it just didn't create this, hey, let's get Vance. It just didn't feel like all for one. It felt like a bunch of guys on parallel tracks still doing their job. But there wasn't a lot of intersection. And Vance completely botched the hiring of Brock Olivo. We all like Brock, the energy guy. He was in way over his head. It was a disaster almost from week one. So that's on Vance. I think he liked the high energy. He liked, you know, the special teams guys got to bring something different. He tried to reinvent the wheel with that. That backfired horribly. This new staff, again, you've got guys who are challenging players more, who don't have Super Bowl rings with the Broncos. So, again, on paper, it sets up for Vance to have a more cohesive staff because they're more emboldened to him than the previous staff was. So we'll see.
And the entire staff as a whole should feel like their backs are up against the wall.
Most of them, yes. I mean, it's a critical season for a lot of guys. Joe Woods as a coordinator, Vance Joseph as the head coach.
It's going to determine their future.
Yeah. I mean, Musgrave would get hired somewhere.
He's a little bit different.
Bill Kolar, he's safe. He would be hired in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other guys, Mike Sullivan, who got fired by the Giants. You know, there's a lot of guys who were let go by their teams who arrive here coaching for their next for their future, whether it's long-term here or somewhere else. Again, that's not a bad place to be, but can they bring it all together in one season when this team clearly's off-season was built around getting back to the playoffs? Can they do that? I don't know the answer to that. Can you bring all these guys together and quickly, you know, microwave their development and their chemistry? But I do believe this coaching staff gives Vance a better chance to succeed. And with all due respect to DMAC, I just don't see Gary Kubiak wanting to be head coach again.
I agree with you. And even though you look at Gary's age, he's only 56 years old. He's still a young guy in terms of, you know, professional lifespan. But I, like you, see him. I could take the leap that eventually he could step into a GM role. But even then, you're talking a similar type of grind. It's different. You're not, you know, coaching players every single day. But I think that's even still a little bit down the road.
The one thing I could see him doing if he felt healthy and is being a coordinator again.
You think so?
Because there's so much on your plate as a head coach in the NFL. And it's weekly, you know, from the press every day to boot. I mean, it's
but
just
could
a
you
lot.
See Gary doing that and not being the 18-hour a day Gary as a coordinator?
It would still be stressful, but it's way more stressful as a head coach. You can go bury yourself in film as a coordinator. Where the head coach, it's everything's on your plate all the time. You're worried about 53 guys
sure,
all the time.
Sure.
As a coordinator, you're worried about 22, you're basically 15 guys or whatever. And you can just kind of be the professor who's writing the equation on the chalkboard, not dealing with the students, not dealing, you know what I mean? Like, so, would I be shocked if he coached again? I would not, but I just don't see him wanting to be a head coach again. He doesn't need to. He has nothing to prove at it. So, and I think he's going to be a great personnel guy.
Well, he's the only senior personnel advisor that's left within
right.
the organization.
Correct.
And if he did come back as a coordinator, that would certainly be a different sort of career arc. You know, like not many guys go out and are head coaches of Super Bowl winners and hoist a Lombardi trophy as the HC and then, you know, go back to a coordinator.
But he loves coaching. He loves coaching, but I do think this is whetting his appetite enough to where he doesn't need to coach. And again, his health issues were real. He left an NFL field twice by ambulance.
Right.
Let's not say it wasn't a headache. We had a bad day. Like, these were real health issues. So, and his family was genuinely concerned. So, I don't like that scenario of him being a head coach again based on all the research I did when he left, given his health issues. So,
Zach by Troy Rank filling in for the fellas this morning. Back to Vance, though. Is Vance Last year, I called him the least empowered coach in pro football. He did not pick his staff. He did not really wasn't fully empowered to pick his quarterback until it was just so blatantly, painfully obvious that it had to be Trevor almost by default. But even then, it was like it's not like Vance wanted the predetermined reps. It's not like Vance wanted to start Trevor in one preseason game and then start Paxton in another preseason game. That was preordained. How different is his scenario 365 days later? Is it as not empowered as D-Mac would lay out in his sort of rant that we played a couple minutes ago? Or has John given him back some of the reins?
Yeah, that's a difficult question to answer. I would answer it this way. If Case Keenum is good, Vance Joseph is going to look like a hell of a lot better coach. When your quarterback stinks as a head coach, it's almost impossible to be a good head coach. So how much power does he have in this? I will say he's in a better position to succeed, Zach, because he has what looks like a competent quarterback. Is he going to be – and if I'm Vance, he's got to coach his coaches better, and the it's got to stop with him. Like when the special teams thing went haywire last year and they're running out Isaiah McKenzie, that was an indictment of him not having authority or exercising the authority to say, hey, Brock Olivo comes to you and says, I want Isaiah McKenzie out there. I don't care. He's not. End of story. Go to the next office.
Well, I'll tell you
that's the Vance Joseph I want to see this year. Even if it's wrong and it gets him fired, being indecisive and acting like an assistant coach as a head coach will get you fired.
No doubt.
You can't be the player's best friend as a head coach. I used to talk about this with Clint Hurdle. Clint Hurdle as a hitting coach was the shoulder to cry on. He was the Dr. Phil. He was the couch. Part coach, part couch. You're my guy. Oh, you're not playing enough. Come here. Cry on my shoulder. You become the head coach. You can't be that guy. You can like guys. I like you on a personal level, but there's got to be, it's business. And Gary Kubiak, I respect it, had that. The best coaches, their players will play hard for them, but they know there's a line they can't cross. And last year, Vance, for me, never morphed and evolved from an assistant coach that guys love. They genuinely like Vance Joseph. They do in the locker room. But he's got to act like more like a head coach. There's got to be a line you can't cross. And last year, it was blurry all the time.
There's no question it was.
And
it was.
I think this year, he's learned from that. Like, if this is it for him, and he knows a slow start could get him fired, be the guy. Be decisive. Even if you're wrong, it's better than last year of letting, oh, the assistant said it's fine. Okay.
Well, Troy, here's the most ironic part about this to me. And this is really a backdrop to everything that you just laid out. That Vance was sold as a leader of men. That was like one of his billings. That was at the top of the promo. That Vance Joseph, although he doesn't have this litany of experience, although he was only a DC for 1 year on the 26th ranked defense in professional football, even though he was coaching D-backs in Cincinnati 750 days ago, by God, this guy is going to be a leader of that locker room.
Then let him. And he wasn't empowered to do that in part because he was so beholden to his assistants. He had too much respect.
It defeated the whole purpose, Troy.
He had too much respect for his assistants. And it came from the right place. He has a good heart. He's an assistant. There's the whole thing, let your coaches coach. Well, when they're coaching you into a ditch,
right?
Tell them, enough. If I'm going to get fired, it's going to be because of my decisions, not because you're running out a guy who can't catch a punt. Like, I'm going to get fired because I screwed up, not because you think this is the right. No, I'm running the football. The guy catching punt, he's out. That tackle, he's out. Run this guy. That's what I would do. And I might be wrong, but I can sleep at night. He was too nice last year. And this year, I think he's learned a hard lesson. If you're going to be a leader of men, that starts with leading your coaching staff. And you get in those meetings, you take input, and then it's not a democracy at that point. You make the decision, you live with the decision. And I think he will be better at that. Is it enough? Because it's a short window. He doesn't have many banana peels he can step on anymore. But I think he's learned, like, hey, I can't be Mr. Nice Guy. I can't be, oh, I trust all my coaches. No. You make the decision, live or die with it. And I think you'll see that. What'll be enough? I don't know. I don't know.
Well, you have to. You have to see it. Because if you don't see it, first of all, he's going to be gone. Okay. But, and second of all, it will validate. If you don't see it, it will validate the doubts that I already have about him. Because there was too many times last year where, and you talked about one of them, and we've all talked about it. He said, you know, if you can't go to Brock Olivo and say, hey, knock it off, or hey, I'm putting my foot down, we're not rolling this dude out there again and again and again. If you can't do that, you're missing a fundamental prerequisite to be in that position. Like, forget the leader of men billing and all that. It's a prerequisite. You're the guy. You're the boss. And I know he had never been in that position before, so I want to a certain degree, look at it on a curve, but a lot of it was so visually loud and over the top that I had no choice but to come in on Mondays and be like, what was John thinking hiring this guy? And I know a lot of folks around Broncos country have felt the same way. Is it a lifetime in judgment though? Lifetime judgment though? No, it's not. It's not an indictment on his career. But boy, if he doesn't figure it out quick, he won't be back in this role for another handful of years.
Well, listen, I've known Vance Joseph since he's 19. I've covered the CU teams he was on. His teammates gravitated to him. He has leadership attributes, strong leadership attributes. But as the leader of a team, as a coach, he didn't seem to make the jump. He did not make the jump from being an assistant coach. Players like you. I like this guy. I play hard. As a head coach, it stops with you. You're paid to make the difficult decisions. And last year, it felt like he gave his head assistant coaches way too much leeway.
He did.
When it was clear the bus was off, you know, the train was off the rails, and he kept trusting it when there was no reason to anymore. And I think he's learned a hard lesson from that. I think it's going to be reflected in some of his decisions. But now, can he make consistently right decisions? We don't know that. But if I'm him, and I was within hours of being fired after 1 year, I do my self-evaluation. And number one is, I don't talk about practice ever again in a press conference.
Please, God,
If anyone asked me, I said, we got our work in.
Yep.
How'd practice go? Got our work in.
Pretty simple, right? I like that a lot.
I don't say how it was. We got our work in. Move, next question. No Broncos fan in Broncos country wants to hear about practice at this point. None. Secondly, anything that goes in terms of personnel, I'm putting my stamp on. And if that gets me fired, then it gets me fired.
At least it'll be on my terms, right?
It'll be on my terms. Because
right.
The alternative is what we saw last year, which when you try to make everybody happy, nobody's happy, and you stink as a team. And I think he learned from that. I do. I really do think he'll improve. But is he going to improve enough, quickly enough? Because he shrank his honeymoon period, shrank by...
Whew.
Not day,
half
not
time
hours.
Of the Giants game.
Yeah, it's like right? He's on notice now.
Oh, there's clearly
you because I thought going into this he had two full seasons. He doesn't now. He doesn't clearly now. So if I'm him again, his self evaluation in the off season is I make the decisions. Stops with me. Leader of men starts with leading his coaching staff number one and making it clear from jump. I'm making personnel decisions. And if I have no power, then I'm just going to keep making them, and I'm going to voice my discontent about it, and then maybe that gets me fired. But I'm not doing it like I did it last year. Because if it resembles at all what happened last year, they're not going to the playoffs.
Nope. But I'll say this. I'll say this. Case Keenum might bail him out.
One position, if you're going to be good at one position in the NFL – that position can camouflage a lot of blemishes.
It could literally give Vance an extra 2 or 3 years here as the head coach. We'll see, because we've seen John move on from guys even despite having success in order to reach another level of success. But typically, if a quarterback's playing well, a head coach can ride those coattails a little bit, and we'll see if that's the case. I'm going into the season, Troy, with I have to consciously reset myself because I have a tendency, because last year went the way it was, and you have so articulately laid it out, talking about the 8-game losing streak and most blowouts in pro football and longest losing streak in 50 years. I have a hard time moving on from that when it comes to Vance. But at the same time, I want to go into the season with an open mind and be receptive to the fact that he can get better, just like I'm hoping that Isaiah McKenzie can get better, that Garrett Bowles can get better. Vance had never done the job before. Think about this. We had a new head coach, never done the job before. New defensive coordinator, had never done the job before. New special teams coordinator, had never done the job before. And a quarterback, three different quarterbacks, who have no opportunity to even start or have potential to compete for a starting role the very next year. You take a step back and look at that, the way I just laid it out, it's no wonder, and shame on me for being naive enough to think that they would be something that they weren't a year ago, but it's no wonder that things got as bad as they did with that type of, you know, inexperience that bordered sometimes on ineptitude.
Well, it's why the Case Keenum acquisition is so big, because if he's good, a lot of these other issues start to solve themselves. If you're good at quarterback and you have a competent offense, you run the football, suddenly it feels like you have a chance. But you outlined it. The problem I saw with it, we knew of the inexperience, but it was the old, you know, one loose thread, you pull it and the whole sweater unraveled. And that's kind of what happened last year, I saw. They got off to a 3-1 start. They were pretty good in the preseason. There were encouraging signs. And then you go 3-1, and then that Giants game hit, and that was the loose thread. And you pulled it, and it was like, whoa, like, what just happened? They can't even compete. They went from a team, you're like 3-1, top 10 team in the NFL, playoff, are they going to play for a one seed, to a month later, they were one of the worst teams in the NFL. So that inexperience haunted them. Every time they played a good team, they got out-coached. Philly, Kansas City, New England exposed them in
blatantly. Every
way possible.
Yeah.
From clock management to personnel to, you know, everything. Scheme. Those teams had them chasing ghosts the whole game. They planned for one thing, they did something else. And then when they finally get even with something, they turn the ball over and do something stupid. And they will learn from it. But again, my question is, can they learn quickly enough to get back in the hunt? And it's all going to go back for me to a competent offense, the 3-1 touchdown interception ratio for Case Keenum. And that goes back to the fact, can you run the football? You can run the football adequately. They'll be in the hunt. If you can't, and Case Keenum is going to throw 30, 35 times a game, they're going to be right back to 5-11, 6-10.
There's tons of reaction on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. Did Vance get better as the season went on? No, they got worse. That is fair. That is fair. But here's what I'll say. I think the season reached a point where, you talk about the unraveling sweater, I think it reached a point where, I don't want to say they quit, but they were checked out in terms of competing on the highest level.
Well, they were like a baseball team that's out of it, and they called up all the rookies, September call-ups. Their last few weeks of the season, they were playing guys. They were that you just to see if they had any future with the team. They had multiple guys who got shut down with injuries that if they were in it would have still played. So the last couple games, it was, you know, would they have kept trying to force the issue with Lynch if they were out of it? No. You know, I mean, there were mitigating factors, but to the texter's point, it's clear. Vance didn't exactly bathe himself in glory last year.
Nope.
He's got again, like the team, when we say prove it, it starts with him. It starts with him, and I would say 1A, 1B with the quarterback position. If the quarterback position is good and solid and competent, Vance Joseph's chances of rebounding as a head coach increase dramatically. If there's a carousel at quarterback or turnovers, Vance Joseph won't survive that. He just won't. Not many coaches would, but he clearly won't based on the lack of confidence they showed in him at the end of last season.
Zach Bye, Troy Rank filling in for the fellas this morning. Troy, I got to tell you, I am looking forward to this specific preseason as much as I've looked forward to any preseason in a previous year, and I'll tell you why next. Troy Rank, Zach Bye filling in for the fellas this morning. Troy, I got to tell you, I am as fired up for this preseason as I have been for any preseason in my life, okay? Preseason typically is not an eye roller. It's interesting. You look out for things and you start to notice what will ultimately become your team's reality. But this season, it's a little bit different. Actually, it's a lot of bit different. The very first preseason game of the year, Saturday, August 11th, which, by the way, is in about less than a month, okay? Less than a month, we're going to be watching football again. And it's the Minnesota Vikings. Let's start there. The relationship between the Vikings and the Broncos at this particular point in time is fascinating to me. Because we got a guy in Case Keenum who just brought that team to the NFC Championship the previous season. I also have it on great information from a member within that locker room that there was a lot of members inside those four walls in Minnesota that were pissed that Case Keenum was not picked up once again or re-signed by the Minnesota Vikings. So we have that element of it, Troy. But we also have the element that backups play a lot in the preseason, especially the first preseason game. The starters are going to get a series, maybe two, and then backups come. Who's the backup in Minnesota? It's Trevor Siemian. And we often see the third stringers as well. Who's the third stringer? Kyle Sloter. And the fact that we're also going to see Kirk Cousins, the one-time sparkle in a lot of fans' eyes, looking at you, D-Mac, we're going to see him too. So the dichotomy of the very first preseason game to me, Troy, is it as fascinating to you as it is to me where I sit?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Because it's the preseason, and it doesn't matter.
Come on, Troy.
It doesn't matter. It's
I know it doesn't matter.
It's a captivating game if it were the regular season. I want to see the build up to the week, because I think during training camp you see more candor from some quotes, and I don't know that Keenum would, because he's in a better position. But Mike Zimmer never bought into Keenum. Never. Even when he had him. I'm not saying when he's out the door.
But I know.
He was looking for a reason to bench him every week. Every week. It was like, what's the one play he's going to make to justify so I can put Teddy Bridgewater / Sam Bradford back into the game? It was crazy to me. The guy, all he was doing is winning games and making plays. And they could not wait. So that part is actually more intriguing to me from the Minnesota side, because Keenum's not going to play it up like, oh, I'm going to get you. I mean, there's nothing to be gained by from him. He's got his own chore here to resurrect this franchise and revive this franchise. But the Siemian thing is interesting. And for Bronco fans that were captivated by the Sloter story, if Sloter plays well, it won't be he should be here. It would then justify the thing of, like, why wasn't he kept and he could have beaten out Siemian. So there's intrigue. I just – fake games give real impressions, but not for me until week three of the preseason.
Well, I'm looking forward to it personally, but it goes beyond that one game.
Yeah.
Here's why I'm fascinated about this preseason. And I was kind of having a lot of fun with Vikings game.
Right, I know.
But here's why I'm really honing in. I want to see how they handle two things in particular. How they handle the running back room and how they distribute the audition carries. Because it's a full room. You got Rolls-Royce Freeman, who you drafted in the third round. You got Booker, who we know they believe in, but has been lackluster. 253 career carries, not really much to show for it. You have undrafted rookie, who they like, Philip Lindsay, who we've seen implemented a lot through OTAs and minicamp. They have another drafted running back in D'Angelo Henderson, who actually showed you something last year. They have another drafted running back, David Williams, who has a bigger body and looked the part during the three phases of OTAs and minicamp. I want to see what their plan is for, again, just the distribution of carries during this audition phase, because all these guys ain't going to play.
And they're not all making the team. I mean, there's no way they're all making the team. Williams showed more to me than I expected, I'll be honest, because I was kind of underwhelmed by his career at Arkansas, but I see why they like him. I mean, I'm not saying he's Terrell Davis type pick, but he's a sneaky pick. He was bigger than I expected, a physical guy. I mean, I didn't give him much a chance when they drafted him, but I think D'Angelo Henderson's in a fight for a roster spot, clearly. Philip Lindsay's in a tough spot because he's got to find a niche outside of the running back room for me. And the way they've changed the special teams coverage rules now, that could be his niche. I would love to see him on that because he's high energy And maybe he ends up being a better running back than some of these other guys. But the problem he could run into is if Carlos Henderson makes the team, which I don't think he is going to. I say that now.
You don't think he's going to?
I do not think he's going to make the team. But if he does, that could hurt Lindsey, because if they start carrying X amount of receivers, then another running back could end up biting it, you know, because those pieces have to fit. But I would be shocked if Royce Freeman isn't given a clear path to start in terms of a clear opportunity to show us you can be the guy.
I think if you pulled the curtain back on what the Broncos are thinking, what John Elway, Vance Joseph is thinking, Bill Musgrave, if you pulled the curtain back, I think you'd find out that Royce Freeman is their ideal plan. I think that's how they hope things go.
It makes the C.J. Anderson move make more sense, because C.J. was their best offensive player last year, most productive offensive player last year for me. And coming off,
he's a ninth leading rusher in the NFL.
Yeah, coming off last season, or coming off his injury, admirable. Everything about it was admirable. He's gone. And for that move to make sense, Royce Freeman turning into a guy as a rookie making minimum, you're like, okay, I get it. You're not going to pay CJ $4.5 million. You can get similar to production from a rookie. So Royce Freeman, for me, that's the one I'm watching. Because remember when, like, Bowles says, oh, Bowles has got to earn it. He's got to earn it. He was starting early in camp. Now, it won't be that early. But I don't think, for me, you need to know after that third preseason, going into that third preseason game,
Redskins,
Freeman is pushing for the job, and that he gets, maybe he starts that game. And you come out of that game knowing, like, he's the guy or he isn't the guy. But that you have to have clarity. Don't go into the regular season with, we're not sure on our right guard, we're not sure on our running back. Like, enough. Make a decision and go with it. Go with it.
The other phase of this football team, why I am so looking forward to preseason, is for the same reasons I am critically watching the running back room, and that's how they handle the backup quarterback position. Do they have a built-in advantage for Paxton Lynch? Are we beyond that, where there's the predetermined nature of everything? Or is it a authentic, genuine, open competition between Paxton Lynch and Chad Kelly?
Well, like, one guy's a first-round pick. He's always going to have a little bit of nudge. He is. I mean, if it's all things are equal, he's going to win it. I mean, if they battle it out.
So if it's close again, if it's close, it's Paxton.
It's exactly. I mean, he's their first round pick.
If it's not close, will they acknowledge it and not have Paxton be the backup?
I think, again, you have to, because players know. And that the reason Trevor beat out Paxton is it became so obvious. Like, players weren't buying into Lynch, and he wasn't making enough plays. I mean, we have a number of reasons. But as
Paxton's
a coach,
tall.
A coach, you can't make decisions that are clearly, you can't, you know, contradict what's clear to everyone. Like, oh, Paxton's doing great, when he's not. But if it's even, if it's even, Paxton wins it. If you're Chad Kelly, you have to have a great camp, not a good camp, not some moments. If you're going to beat out a guy who was drafted in the first round and you were the last pick overall, you have to have a great camp. You got to knock the guy out. And if it's even, Paxton would be the backup. But the more curious question is, if neither one of them play particularly well, then what?
I think you pick up the phone. I think you wait 2 weeks into camp. And if you are not impressed, if you are not inspired, I think you pick up the phone and try to get a veteran in here.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Whether it's Teddy Bridgewater, whether it's Josh McCown.
No!
It won't be McCown.
I'm just throwing out names. You call Buffalo and grab A.J. McCarron for the second time in this year, because they tried. I think you make a move like that because you used the word contradict in a previous statement. I think if you say that you are in win now mode and every move in an offseason indicates that you are in win now mode, but play a game of semantics with the backup quarterback position, I think it contradicts. It flies in the face of win now, because a backup quarterback played last year, a backup quarterback played the year before, and a backup quarterback played the year before that. It's an important position, and I don't think we should mail it in and say, you know what, we'll choose between the two. I think that you should be open to the idea that if you're not impressed, you go get a veteran. What do you think?
Where you need a veteran is if Case Keenum sprains his ankle and is going to miss two games. If he's going to miss six or seven games, your season's lost.
Sure, sure.
But you do need a guy that you can say, can I run this guy out for 2 weeks and we can go 1-1? You know, or we could go 2-0. If it's, we need a guy who could maybe start 6-8 games, then you're lost anyway. Then you didn't make the right decision with Keenum, which, again, I like the Keenum decision based on the money especially involved. We talk about low risk, high reward with Isaiah Thomas. I mean, in a lot of ways, this is low risk, high reward for the Broncos given the quarterback market of the previous years. But if Kelly and Lynch are not showing competency early, I agree with you there that if you can't look at him and say, one of these guys could keep us afloat for a couple of weeks.
2 to 3 games.
Then do we need to make a move? I doubt they would. I really doubt it because it. I just doubt it.
We'll follow it, of course. And a lot of the criticism I'm seeing on the RamosLaw.com text line is that you still have the same offensive line. You still have the same questions at right tackle. Well, there's one reputable outlet who says that's less of a worry than you may think it is. And we'll explain next. Happy Friday the 13th. Troy Rank, Zach By filling in for the fellas this morning. Troy, there is a constant, I won't call it a complaint, but just a constant really narrative and a theme that has followed the Denver Broncos for the better part of the last, call it 3-4 seasons, and that's the offensive line. You know, every time that we start talking about someone like Case Keenum or Royce Freeman, we see folks hop on the RamosLaw.com text line and say, oh, it's, you know, he's still got that offensive line. Case Keenum isn't going to block for himself. But you stumbled upon something while we were on the air here that should inspire some optimism. What'd you find?
Well, I mean, again, take with a grain of salt because it's hard to measure and quantify sometimes the impact of offensive linemen. But Pro Football Focus, a site I use periodically, and they do their research. They certainly have guys. I did a story about this PFF and how it came about a couple of years ago. But they ranked all the offensive lines, 1 to 32. Number 1, should be no surprise based on the end of last season, Philadelphia Eagles. They were really good. The Broncos, I scrolled down immediately because, again, everyone knows they've had the MacGyver chicken wire duct tape offensive line for basically since the Super Bowl.
Right. So you scrolled all the way down, like starting with 32. Like, where did they get slotted?
Like I was clicking. Like right. I was clickbaiting myself. Like,
sure.
Okay, this is obviously in my inbox for a reason because Broncos are going to be like 31 and there's a story in it. Surprisingly, Bronco fans, which is encouraging, they have the Broncos ranked 19th, up from 4 spots from a year ago when they were 23rd. The reason that I found this curious is the why they think they're going to be better. And I'll read. The Broncos have suffered through arguably the worst right tackle situation in the NFL the past 2 seasons. This is true. The position of right tackle has become to what Spinal Tap is to drummers. We all know that. Menelik Watson. Nice guy, great accent, did not work out. They said, and I quote, but there's reason to think they will change in 2008. Jared Valdir was a mess early last season in Arizona. He allowed 19 pressures in his first 3 starts as he shifted from the left to right side. It was a really awkward, rugged transition.
Rough start.
They say, but he only allowed 20 pressures over his last 10 games. That late season play, and I quote here, is more in line with Valdir's career that we've seen, and he could finally be the answer to the Broncos' pass protection woes. So if he does trend upward, as this shows, and he's healthy and his foot is healthy, which he missed the offseason, they cautiously take a cautious approach. If he's healthy with the foot, he looks the part, 6'7", 3'10", whatever. He's a mammoth of a man.
He is among the biggest football players I've ever seen.
Right.
Like he sticks out among
men.
Men, yeah.
So if he's healthy with the foot, he plays more closely, his play more closely resembles what it did where he allowed, again, 20 pressures over the last 10 games as opposed to 19 in his first 3.
So 19 pressures in his first 3 games and then 20 total in the last 10 games.
So clearly.
Terrific improvement, yeah.
Based on their grading system, which some debate, but based on what they watched, clear improvement. And the fact, don't forget, 2 new offensive line coaches for the Broncos who are going to different protection sets. No more 5-7 deep drops. They are going to the quicker drops in pass pro to allow them. And I say this not with a wink-wink. Russell Okung switched to that kind of pass set in the Chargers last year
it's
after leaving
out.
The Broncos.
Yeah.
He was a Pro Bowler. So sometimes you can protect
did
a player.
Did he make the Pro Bowl?
I think he did. If I look, he definitely rebounded, had a nice year.
Yeah,
for
no, he did.
So sometimes you can maximize a player's potential through scheme. So interesting. Again, Pro Football Focus ranked at the linemen, the offensive lines 1 through 32. The Broncos, if you're a Bronco fan, encouraged by the fact they ranked 19th. And the deeper dive into that, the reason they think they're going to improve is because of Valdir will finally give them stability at right tackle that they've lacked. They also, as I do, have Connor McGovern eventually being the right guard, beating out Max Garcia.
Well, I'll tell you, Troy, if they can get those two different energies working at once, the first energy being you could finally have an answer at this position, great position of need, right tackle, but also you have a guy in Case Keenum who was ranked by that same outlet as the number one quarterback in the NFL handling pressure in the pocket. Now, Case Keenum isn't a natural runner, although he is an effective runner. On average, Case Keenum picked up one first down every single game for the Vikings with his legs. And if you can guarantee your quarterback picking up a first down once every Sunday with his legs to keep a drive alive, you would sign up for that 10 times out of 10. But that's not what I'm talking about with Case Keenum in the pocket. He has a great, not a good, a great sense of awareness. He is not a scrambler, but he moves around with purpose in the pocket to create space for himself. And he elevates, he elevated that line in Minnesota, which was ranked directly next to, neighbors with the Denver Broncos. But you take a look at both of them and they looked worlds apart, because of that factor with Case. So if you tell me we have that type of presence in the pocket at the same time as you have a fix at right tackle, potentially at the same time as Garrett Bowles is ideally taking a step forward year one to year two, at the same time as Matt Paradis says he's able to build strength of since the first time since his sophomore year at Boise, you have a handful of things going for you at once that, again, I don't want to paint some pie in the sky, but if you can have those things come to fruition, boy, I mean, this could look like a totally different team because of those things coming together.
Yeah, well, and Keenum, too, you brought it out. Like, the Broncos ranked worst in the NFL last year in red zone sacks allowed, 12. The Vikings, I think, were 2, the fewest. Keenum was nails last year in the red zone. The Broncos were ranked dead last in red zone efficiency.
Dead last.
So there's room for improvement. The bar was set low.
But what you're doing here is you're taking one of the Broncos' biggest weaknesses. Ineptitude in the red zone. The worst red zone team in football, the Broncos were, they've just injected onto their team the best red zone quarterback. 17 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. Last season, over the course of a whole year, Troy, 17 touchdowns, 0 interceptions in the red zone for Case Keenum. Case Keenum's strengths and his stability of the position might be exactly what the doctor ordered to get this thing back on track.
Well, again, there's some things that that are intriguing on how they could align given the areas of weakness and what he does well. You do see it, again, as you dig deeper into the numbers, whether it's red zone sacks, whether it's red zone efficiency, whether it's just efficiency with the football, whether it's protecting the football. Everything they were horrible at last year, Case Keenum was among the best in the NFL. Not on his team, not in his conference, in the NFL. So, again, if he can duplicate that or have something that resembles a facsimile of that, they're in a much better position. We'll see. But I do like the thing you pointed out, because one thing that does get lost on Keenum, he's a really good athlete. And he's more mobile than people think, but it's within the pocket. He's like a shark, no wasted movement. And those are the best quarterbacks, not guys running around, running wild, Manziel or Fran Tarkenton back in the day. It's guys who one step here, two steps there, buy time, receiver gets clear, boom, accurate. Because that's what he's good. He's accurate. We'll see. We'll see. It's interesting.
Great working with you again, Troy.
Absolutely a blast. It went by. I think I was asleep for half of it, but.
No, you were great. Thank you guys for rocking with us. There's never an off season for talking Broncos. You guys have a great, not a good, a great weekend. We'll see you soon.